So welcome here at, no, it's not the Urbanistica podcast, it's the City, the Urban Acupuncture podcast. We normally make it in Dutch, René Teulen and myself, my name is Jeroen Laven, but now we do it in English because of Placemaking Week. Placemaking Week is the biggest event in Europe where we talk about public space and interventions in public space. And of course, placemaking is important, but we think there's a concept that might be even more, or okay, close to be as interesting as placemaking. And we call that urban acupuncture. And today we are really happy because we can combine the world of placemaking and urban acupuncture with the world of culture. We have two guests with us, Donika Buisman. She's the creative director, I think. Are you creative director, Donika?
I'm the founder and general director.
The founder and general director of Raum in Utrecht, and also the woman behind the concept of creative placemaking. She's going to talk about that very soon. And we have Marlon Tietre. Well, you're the, what kind of director? You're the general director of the Filmhuis Den Haag, and the art cinema that we have in the city of The Hague. Also very interested in the concept of creative placemaking. And together we're going to explore what it's all about. But first, maybe a little bit urban acupuncture. So what is urban acupuncture? We believe if you look at the Chinese way to look at acupuncture, it's about putting a needle in somewhere in your body and it heals the whole body. That's a very magnetic experience. And we believe that the same happens if you do small intervention in the city, if you do it smart. If you do a small intervention, not just the project benefits, but the whole city can benefit. And we believe we're going to explore if that connects to the concept of creative placemaking. Donika, maybe let's give the floor to you. So what is creative placemaking?
Well, let's start with that I am not the woman behind creative placemaking, although I do like the compliment. Thank you very much. But it derives from the United States of America and Barack Obama, who wanted art and culture to be more beneficial to towns and cities and the citizens themselves. He asked the Arts Foundation in America to come up with a plan about how to do that, and they call it creative placemaking. And it's all about how we use these rooms, these spaces in these cities, public spaces, parks, squares, but also libraries, for instance, to truly bring together all these different communities in the cities and to use art and design to do that. And the only way we can truly do that and truly create meaning for these citizens is by involving them. So it's also very much about a democratic process that is behind it and how you use art and culture in these processes to make sure that people feel at home, feel welcome, and feel that they belong.
Okay. And are there good examples already in Europe or even in the Netherlands?
Yeah, there are big and small good examples. And it's also sometimes a little bit about changing the way you view what already exists. For instance, a movie theater. For me, of course, our own project is a very, very good example.
Okay. And maybe you can tell a little bit about your project, because not everybody knows Raum and mm-hmm. What you're doing there.
Yeah, I'm sorry about the statement here. But it is harder to find good examples that are bigger, have bigger investments behind it, and also that work from the temporary to the structural. Because sometimes what you see is that you have these smaller acupunctural
terrible word.
Yeah, it's also for pronunciation, it's a little bit difficult, but we'll get there. But these smaller things that you can do in the city sometimes are just temporary. So sometimes just about in and out, which is also very important, like a festival or a market can truly be important for the general view of a certain space. What happened at Raum is actually that the municipal government behind it truly invested in making sure that there was a cultural institution that was built around this citizen engagement, around art and culture, around how can you make a structural cultural facility with doing smaller interventions and making them bigger and bigger and bigger. So we've been working on it for about 8 years. So we have a cultural square that truly derives from local communities. All the installations that are in place are co-created with local communities, all the markets, all the workshop, everything that we do is co-created with local communities. And it's all about giving ownership, you know, having some sort of direction generally about what you want to achieve. For us, that's making sure that all these different people in the city truly interact and meet each other, which is not the case still. Mm-hmm. So that's our general mission, but we do all these different kinds of things and all different kinds of participation means and ways of working together with designers and makers and artists to make sure that, yeah, that a space is truly owned and felt welcome by very many different kinds of communities.
Okay. So Raum is, of course, in Utrecht. And let's move to another big city in the Netherlands. Marlon, if you hear the story about creative placemaking and about Raum, how does it sound to you?
It sounds really inspiring, because in The Hague, we also have a square, the Spuiplein. And I would say that the Spuiplein is really an interesting square, because in many ways it is a new square. It's a new square because there are many new players on the square. The biggest building that you see there is called Amare, and it was completed about 2 years ago. And it completed a trajectory towards having big cultural players of The Hague around a square. So the Royal Conservatoire is there, the City Orchestra, but also the big concert hall that was moved for several years to the side of the city in expectation of the completion of this building. And the film house The Hague that I work for is also one of the inhabitants of the square. So we have this space. But what you see is that naturally we are players focused on making sure that our own organizations, that our own buildings are occupied and filled with wonderful programming. But that doesn't automatically mean that there is a kind of inviting energy on the square. So there is a call towards the inhabitants of the city through all kinds of open and welcoming programming, also participatory programming in the institutions. But the step that we have to make right now is to move out of our buildings and look to the square. This is one. And second, find a way to do that together. So I think that in The Hague, we will have to look at you, Donika, and see how you do these things at Raum, and also learn from them and see if we can energize the initiatives that are already there and bring them to the next level.
Okay. So you're talking about that we should do it in the future, but are you already experimenting with it from your role from the film house?
We are in several ways. So one of the events that we organized just last month is we created an outdoor cinema. So we had 9 days in a row outdoor cinema, and we collaborated with one of the other partners on the square, a hotel, and we set up like a wonderful cinema there, which was visible to the city, which was inviting in a way. Many people call for a cinema on the square. So this is one of the ways that we try to create a visibility of what you can see inside our buildings and create them outside. And in many cases, I think this is one good example, it is actually more fun to experience it outside than inside the building.
Okay. And if I look at both your initiatives, I think they're both very successful, there's a lot of people who are attracted to it. But there's also but they first attract the people that already find your institutions, the visitors of the film house or film lovers, quite often highly educated, in your case also a specific group. But you're both situated on squares that are the heart of the city. So how can you make sure that it becomes that creative placemaking is inclusive, that you really invite everybody?
Well, for us, the program is made with the communities in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So for us, we don't have a specific audience other than the focus groups that we are working with, or the target groups. Target groups, not the right word. The people who actually live there, which are mainly young families with kids, some elderly. We have a lot of people with Dutch people with a Moroccan background in our vicinity. So we make program with them together with makers and designers and artists to make sure that what we do is of them, from them, is for them. So that is a little bit different, I think, than at least a lot of the cultural organizations that I know who actually have a specific audience that come to a specific discipline of culture, who like film, who like theater, who like music. We do film, we do theater, we do music, we do art, we do workshops. So for us, it's not the discipline that is the main attraction. It's actually how do we make a program that fits with what people feel happy with, and also in a way that it that is innovative. So people who don't live in that neighborhood are also attracted to it. So for us, it's an it's another way of thinking, another way of making a program.
I think a lot of organizations are aiming to do that, but they're not quite often very successful. So can you tell us some of your tricks? How do you get them involved, and also how do you keep them involved?
Well, let's start with it's hard. I've been working at it now for 8 years, and actually I think maybe even for the last year and a half, maybe we figured it out, but we will know for sure in another 5 or 10 years. So what we see now is that we do, because we were really struggling with how can you be in charge of the total program so that people who don't know you understand what it is that you are doing. And actually have a program. Okay, on Thursday I can do that, on Friday I can do that. You know, we have an exchange place where people can get games to play with in our square, in our public space. So actually getting a program that people understand, whilst at the same time with a mission that people understand, whilst at the same time doing that together with a lot of communities, it takes a lot of time, because you are investing more time in the communities themselves than in researching, you know, which program is the most interesting at the moment. You are really, you know, putting an effort into giving ownership, so making different kinds of programs that also have different levels of participation in them. So some we make up, you know, it's our program, and we do that together with people, but we say this is the theme, this is what we're going to do. And on the other end of the stick, there are programs that we say you can decide what you want to do, and we don't meddle. So kind of finding a balance between truly giving ownership and at the same time taking the lead. And also what kind of processes fit with these different kinds of participation. I can tell more about that, but maybe with a specific example later. But that's kind of the way we've been researching how to truly do that.
Okay. Marlon, very different from a film house, but maybe not.
Well, I mean, I think I really agree with Danica. The involvement of those that you would like to be part of your circle is key. So one of the things we did, you know, just kind of briefly going back to our idea of this outdoor cinema, every year we organize a film festival, Roots Film Festival, for makers from The Hague, many who are self-taught and self-developed their work. So we thought we need to make a connection to our outdoor cinema. So each night we showcased their work. We had them, you know, record a little video message for the audience. And these are small steps, small ways to demonstrate as a cultural institution that what you do is a little bit broader than just, you know, sending out information. You want to also showcase talent, and you want your visitors to know a little bit about it. But I think that it is also about a kind of democratization of your programming process. And I think that many of the institutions on the square are perhaps now thinking, how can we do that on the square? But indeed, as you said, it starts with what you're doing every day in the basis of your programming. I mean, just to give you an example, you know, we're thinking now of we introduced a way of showcasing and connecting to stories from the city in all its diversity. So, you know, in October we have Black Achievement Month. In November we go into 6 years of Turkish migration. In December we delve into this topic of Afro-Caribbean spirituality. You don't do that alone. So you do that together with partners, you try to reach a community. So you create a program, you want to make programs, and you want to involve them. And I think then that the next step for us is to say, well, how do we create a kind of architecture in which we don't do that by ourselves on that square, but we can connect to initiatives of the other partners on the square, because they also have all kinds of open programming. And you know, finding a logical way to do that is, I think, the big, you know, let's say the next challenge for us, and finding a way to connect the initiatives to make sure that we're not all talking about Turkish migration without doing anything together. It requires a little bit of adjustment.
I actually like the word architecture in this as well, because it's all about creating new design processes to design your program in a way that is democratic. And these new ways of designing these processes, that's actually the innovation and you know, the way forward. And it's different for every institution, it's different for every space, it's different for every community. So you really have to, I mean, there are some generalizations possible, but it's truly about, you know, what works in my city, what works from my discipline, what works from my mission. And, you know, the fact that in that you... I think the public space helps because the public space, in essence, is a space that is shared. So people feel more of a need and a natural awareness about, listen, this is also my space. Or at least you can create that awareness. So that helps in the democratic process, I think. And the fact that so many different cultural institutions with so many different disciplines and so many different ways of working, organizations, culture, are also wanting to work together in that, it creates an extra level of difficulty, but it also creates an extra level of possibility. And I'm very curious about, you know, how that will look like in a couple of years.
And isn't that... Well, maybe to spot on urban acupuncture, isn't that the way how your initiative spreads out in the city? Because you connect with local communities, you connect with the other programming institutions and that kind of stuff.
I think the way we look at it, because we've been really working also on, you know, for whom do we do what we do? Because at first the ambition also from the city was you should do it for the neighborhood, for the city, for the country, but also internationally. So you should, you know, attract a lot of different people. And in the end we say, okay, no, we start with our own neighborhood, because if we're talking about inclusivity, if we're talking about wanting to connect all these different groups, then if we're not successful in our own vicinity, you know, the
then
whole.
You're not connected.
No, then you can shout a lot of beautiful words, but it, you know, you don't have the proof for the pudding.
It's the eating, yeah.
but the people that live in your neighborhood, you know, they connect to people that live in other spaces as well. So what you do in your own neighborhood also attracts other people in the city that feel. Involved with these communities or feel attracted to these communities as well. And so it becomes a ripple effect. If you do it good, if you do it properly, if you do it with a level of innovation and a level of quality is not the right word, but making sure that a program is not just for one community or not just for one small group of people, but making sure that what you do can also be attractive for a broader group of people, then I think you can have that ripple effect and that urban puncture, urban
acupuncture, yeah. And then you make impact in the whole city.
By steps, because if you say the whole city, then you make impact within different communities within that city. Because I think if we tend to make it too big too soon. And in that way, it's difficult in itself. So if we make it too big too soon, you actually lose the essence of what it is that you want to create with that community. So if you say we are doing a market for a community and it's going to have an impact on the whole city, no, that's not going to happen. But if you're going to do a market based upon the needs of a certain community, then other communities in the city will feel attracted to it as well. And that can have a bigger a ripple effect. But yeah, I'm in the 8 years that I've been doing this at Raum, I'm a little bit hesitant to use such big ambitions too soon.
Yeah, I understand. How is that with programming in The Hague on this pipeline, Marlon?
Well, I'm inspired by the connection that you make around with local communities, and I have to think back to something that happened in our theater a few months ago, and that is that we had a filmmaker who made a film about a school, a 99-year-old school from The Hague, that died briefly before it could hit 100. And the story of the school was kind of fascinating. It started as a kind of upper-class school in the early 20th century, and then somehow through issues with management in the early 21st century disappeared. But if you look deeper into what happened with that school, is that the demography of The Hague changed, and support from the higher social classes for that school disappeared. So it was not so much just a story about that school or about that neighborhood or about The Hague. It was much more a universal story for what happens in our society and some of the patterns that that sometimes occur right before our eyes, and we cannot really do much about it. It was the most successful movie for us in April and May, and it brought about lots of conversations, lots of visitors from the school, and also representing all the different classes that visited that school. And I think for me, this was really kind of an eye opener because it showed how overwhelming the attention for a local story can be. And I think it gives us a good idea on some of the things that we can do on the square with each other together, because this could be a story that is also carried by activities on the square. Because I think that, after all the panels that we did and after watching the film multiple times, and even after having the UNESCO Youth Commission coming over to do a panel about this film, because they were also really interested in it, with members from Parliament coming by, I think that we're still not done talking about it and learning from it.
And for me, the key of what it is that you are saying is the universal meaning. Yeah. So what we see with a lot of the programs that we do, actually two kinds of programs. One is really about what a certain community feels welcome to. So really feels like, okay, this is part of my, like a queer community. A queer community needs a certain safe space, needs a certain... I don't know, surroundings, a certain kind of program to really make them feel, okay, this is a program that is about me, that is for me, that I have built, that, that is for my community. So we do programs like that to make certain communities feel welcome. At the same time, you want to do programs that have a universal meaning to different kinds of communities, so different kinds of communities feel welcome there and actually, have an opportunity to interact if they want. And that part of universal meaning is, I think, also what you are talking about with the urban acupuncture is that you want to create something that speaks to a lot of people in a city. And for that, you need some essence of universal meaning in your program, in your public space, to make that happen.
Maybe to go to a final question or final questions for the both of you. So we're now in Placemaking Week. So there are a lot of placemakers here. And I think if they will listen to this podcast, they will be inspired about what you're doing. But the question that comes to my mind is, where do you think you're going to be in 5 years? And how can you use the help of placemakers and others to take the steps to get there? Marlon, you want to start?
It's a good question. I think that at this stage, all the ideas are in a way a hypothesis. Of course, I mean, I can paint a beautiful future picture of how exactly the space will be used, and you know, everybody will be involved, and we're all going to see the Spouse Square as a dynamic and inspiring place. I mean, I think that would be the general feeling. But listening to what placemaking is all about is as much about the process as it is about the outcome. So I think that to help us forward in the process, we can really use the help of placemakers. And I think that we also have to open ourselves as directors, programmers of institutions to learn from good examples. I think we're just going to have to steal well to make this general utopia come true.
Yeah, for me, hopefully in 5 years' time, because we are now living, working within a temporary structure, which is very cool, by the way. I'm very proud of it. But there's also a new building being built for us and all the other partners that are now on the square. So in 5 years' time, that should be open. And then we will not only have an outside square, but we will also have an inside square. So it's not an exhibition hall, it's not a museum, it's a square, but inside, which we program, and then outside and inside we can open them towards each other, so we have a big space where we hope people feel different, very different kinds of communities, feel welcome, and feel that they can meet each other and become trusted strangers, as we like to call it.
Great. So thanks a lot, both of you. It's very interesting to hear, not just about creative placemaking, but also about what you're working on in both Utrecht and in The Hague. Thank you, Mustafa, for letting us take over your podcast for once. Maybe we're going to do it again one of the other days in the coming week. Thank you, René and Martine, for doing this with us. This was creative placemaking in the Urban Acupuncture meets Urbanistica podcast. Thank you.